Welcome to the Venus Index Podcast. I'm John Barman, and with me is Brad Howard, and today we're going to be talking about the Venus Effect. This is something that came up in the forum, and I guess we've obviously addressed this on the guy's side, but we've never really talked about this on the girl's side as much as, I guess we've touched on it, but we've never really dug right into it. So this is going to be our intro into it. I don't know if we'll even cover everything in one podcast because there's so much to talk about, but we might as well get started. Do you have points you want to get started on, or do you want me to get going?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about it is I've been working on kind of a graphical representation, and when this goes up, I'll have it up. I call it the attention U. And for a lot of women, they're talking about some of the negative things that are happening as they begin to get in better shape. They're talking about sabotage points and why that exists. And if you're not looking at it, if you can just imagine a graph for a second, where on the left side is like the amount of attention you're getting. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. Let's just say it's attention, period. And then if you go along the bottom, we're running that as let's say body shape. So let's say below average to average to, you know, extraordinary. So we're just going to use that. And if you look at it, it looks like that attention U. It's like a U. Like, so if you're overweight, let's say, I'm just going to pull out a number, say 300 pounds, you're getting high attention from pretty much the world, right? And as you lose weight, you tend to kind of blend down into everybody else. So you start to get in less attention. And then the big thing is when you want to go beyond average, it swoops back up because you start to get attention again. And it's both positive and negative, as some of the ladies have seen. And so the thing about the sabotage points that people are running into is that when you're going from the, you know, below average to average, you're basically, your mindset is the alleviation of misery. It's kind of about other people, you know, how they think of you, stuff like that. For a large majority of people, not everyone, this isn't, you know, exact. But then once you sweep and hit average, you know, that misery is kind of gone. You've kind of blended in. You've kind of, you know, it's the pressure's off, so to say.
There's no spotlight on you.
Yeah, there's no spotlight at all. I mean, if you go to a lake or anything like that, I mean, you see tons of average people that nobody even pays attention to, right? And so you've got nothing that is, you can kind of hide, which for a lot of people, that's awesome, you know? Because they've been so long, and even if it's guys that are super skinny, things like that, they've kind of been the butt of ridicule for a little bit, and now they're not dealing with that at all. And so, you know, this kind of goes back to, and we're talking about everyone in general, not necessarily the people closest to you. The other part of that side is when you're going from below average to average, you do seem to get a spike in attention from the people that are around you, in good attention, but it's very transient. It doesn't last very long. So as soon as they're kind of comfortable with you making a change and getting to average, you know, it's that spike of a good attention goes away. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it's like the pat on the back for joining the ranks of average.
Sure. And yeah, exactly. So what happens is now is, all right, so you're at kind of this bottom position of this U, and now you have to make a decision of you want to better yourself and to go from average to, you know, above average to maybe even extraordinary, depending on how far you want to take it. And you can't use the same, you know, running away from misery mentality when you're trying to get an above average body, because that it's not there. There's nothing to run from. The mindset actually shifts. So you're going from, you know, kind of fixing misery and pain into actually building happiness,
mm-hmm.
which is mm-hmm. totally different. And I got this. I showed that video from I think it's Siegelman. He was talking. I looked to what we're seeing when it comes to people getting in better shape, and it seems to be that's that switch or that flip that people just aren't making that flip. From, okay, I went from below average to now I'm average. Okay, now how do I motivate myself to be even better than that? But it becomes a lot more intrinsic and about yourself and what you want and your personal happiness, whereas the other side is all about everyone else and how everyone else sees you and everything like that. So
the motivations become different.
Yes, the motivation comes from kind of a pain. So you're going from a pain source of motivation to a pleasure source of motivation. It's going from everyone influencing you to actually do something to you actually stepping out in front of the crowd and leading. That's the difference. And that's why a lot of people are starting to get more heat, so to say, because whenever you step out in front of the crowd and you start to lead, well, it's just natural that haters start to come. I mean, people start to, you know, we use crabs in a bucket a lot. It could be a lot of that, but there seems to be a lot of what are called congruence tests, and you know, when you start to try to step out and lead and things like that, it's kind of like when women, I guess, understand this, when you're dating and you meet a guy and he seems to be super confident and things like that. I mean, people kind of throw out tests to make sure that you're really that guy and it's not a wall that's up. That can be easily a wall of confidence that can be easily toppled. You know, that this is the real you, you know? And so it's kind of the same thing. Whereas when you're getting into kind of these leadership positions where you're getting a better body and, you know, and that's part of the Venus effect. And let me back that up. That's the big part of the Adonis effect that a lot of guys don't understand, is that that type of body is a leader body, right? And same thing with Venus. I mean, it's, you're thinking about, you know, Cleopatra, Cassiopeia, you know, these type of women. This is a leadership position that you're taking. And so you have to kind of understand that with you taking these steps towards leadership, there's blowback. There always will be.
And I bet you nobody thought of it as that. Like, you're getting in shape and all of a sudden you're some kind of leader.
Yeah, you are.
But that's what happens regardless. I wrote something in the forum about that. Whether you like it or not, you're going to be judged by your body. Like, everyone judges everybody on their first appearance, and, you know, the whole book by the cover thing. Mm-hmm. So you can't, that's at least something within your control. You can't stop people from judging you, but you can at least change what the judgment is based on how you look. So you can not do anything about your look and be, like, you know, upset or whatever it is about the fact that people judge you by the way you look. Or you can accept that that's just human nature and do something about it and harness that to your better advantage. So that would be the positive halo effect you get from looking a certain way. Like, you may not be, you know, someone who looks the part may not actually be capable of being that part, but they still look the part. And then they end up getting the benefit of the doubt. They get the advantage. They get people assuming they are the real leader, assuming they're smarter, assuming all of those things. They get the social benefit of looking the part. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if it's right or wrong, it's not the point. The point is it happens. So you might as well take advantage of it. And that's part of the effect. Now, the other part is the slings and arrows you get from those around you who are reluctant to take the same position. And you got to remember, by doing something of your own volition or own accord to improve your body, you're by definition repositioning everybody else's thoughts of who you are in their minds. So if you are moving towards something better than average, you're forcing everyone else to think of themselves as compared to you. It's like, is she trying to pass me? Should I be doing that? Like, what's wrong with being average, sort of thing? Not that you need to think that way, but that's the way other people will be thinking of themselves. So you're necessarily holding a mirror up in front of everybody else, and they have to think about themselves compared to you. And nobody lives in a vacuum. Everybody thinks of themselves compared to everybody else. That's just how things work. Sure. So it's all an interplay between you and other people. So that's why certain people won't be supportive, because you're sort of putting too much stress on them. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you just got to get a couple of new friends and shed some skin and get rid of a couple people who you thought were friends, but, you know, they were, in some cases you might, not all cases, but in some you might find out that certain relationships were conditional on you being average or you being where they're comfortable with you being. And then you go ahead and make a change. Some people, again, not all, but some people aren't going to like it. And then you find out who they really are. and whether or not they're really going to support you. Sure. And then, you know, there's plenty of people out there to be friends with, and there's no reason to keep negative people around for even 1 minute longer than you have to. So, yeah. And you may not have noticed it until you make a change. And then all of a sudden you've forced their hand, so to speak.
Sure.
And like we've said 1,000 times, it's not about you. It's about them. Everyone's a narcissist, and it'll be about them, their reaction one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And I think I use the example of a grandmother. Unless the person just truly wants what's best for you and don't care at all about their how they are viewed versus you, the way a grandmother, I mean, they're not in competition with you on body shape or social status. They just want what's best for you. Sure. But, you know, and I even purposely left out mother, because I know some women compete with their mother on some of this stuff. Get girls who are not close in age to their mother, but can still have some kind of competition with their mother as far on social status and even body shape. You know, sometimes even someone's mother won't be supportive, but almost everyone's grandmother will be. So that's kind of why I use that as the example of the people who will always support you. And then everyone else is going to have, you know, their own personal reaction to you. And it's kind of, it's not surprising if some are positive and some are negative. Let's say it that way.
Yeah. It seems to me that, you know, and you brought up a good point about, you know, relationships being conditional. I mean, I've said that before, and you say sometimes, I believe it's all the time. I think every relationship you have is conditional based on pretty much where you're at. I mean, I've been in situations where, you know, money sucks and nobody's around, you know, and I've been in situations where money's great and everybody's around. I've been in situations where I look great and nobody's around. It just depends on, you know, where you are in life and who's ready to come along with you on that ride. Some people get off at certain points because they don't have it within them to go to the next level. You know, and you see that all the time. And I mean, think about it. I mean, you go to the gym and you see the people that are really, really into fitness. And I'm not necessarily talking about competitors, but you do see it in competitors a lot. But most people that, if they go to the gym, you see pretty much the people that are really serious. They all talk together. They work out together. They're there. They got their own little lingo. And it's not because they're trying to exclude anybody. It's because everybody else has excluded them.
Oh, yeah. They're the minority. They're the lonely ones.
Sure.
I hate to paint this picture, but there's enough of them that you can always find friends.
Sure.
But if you let society – I mean, if you just let society push you around and you don't take – it's from a diet and fitness standpoint. Like I'm – being a little bit more specific right now. But I mean, again, this bleeds into like relationships, careers, all kinds of stuff. But speaking from diet and fitness, if you just kind of do what North America has there for you, you're going to end up looking like the average North American whatever society you're in. But if you take take a step towards doing something different and you want to affect the shape and look and the fitness of your body, then you can have that. But then you just got to be aware that immersed in a society that the norm isn't that, you're going to have to put a little bit more effort into finding like-minded people and friends that enjoy those same things. And it doesn't mean they're not there. It just means you have to actually put a bit of effort into that social part too. And I've repeated this a million times, you'll have to shed skin. You'll have to, and by that I mean you're going to probably atrophy or remove at least a few relationships that are a negative pressure on that.
Sure.
And that's normal too. I mean, why would you want to hang around with someone? If you're serious about it and you're actually adopting a lifestyle that is better for your body, better for your fitness and all that stuff, it kind of makes sense that you'll find it abrasive to be around people who don't take that seriously for their own body. And it doesn't mean you don't like them as a person. It just means we can't disentangle ourselves from the habits of those around us.
Yeah.
Like if I'm hanging around with somebody who just doesn't really like to work out and kind of likes to always go out and drink beer. Here's a good example. I used to train with a couple of guys who I was kind of taking them under my wing and I was training them, but I was also kind of like the camaraderie of having a couple of workout partners, but they were both the type of guy who would way rather be drinking beer, eating burgers, and just not being at the gym. And I can tell you on more than one occasion, our workouts quickly turned into beer and wings at the bar, like right around the corner. Like, that would never happen with my current workout partners, but back then, those guys were like I was fighting an uphill battle. It was me against, it was like me against them. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't schedule a workout, it didn't get scheduled. If I didn't call them to make sure they were on their way to the gym, they didn't show up. If I didn't force us to finish every set, we'd be drunk. I mean, that's just the way that they would rather be. And so I had to cut them both loose because they were, I mean, it was hard enough for me to get through my own workout and then force two basically guys who would rather be out at the bar. Like it was a negative pressure I had to get rid of. Now there's still buddies that I like to go out with, but I've categorized and placed how much time I can get away with living their life before it starts affecting my body. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, which affects your life. So.
Yeah. So if I know that I'm going to spend a weekend with them, I know what I'm in for. I'm like, yeah, there's going to be more drinking. There's probably going to be more food eaten, pretty much no workouts. But there's other friends that I can hang around with socially where woven into the fabric of a weekend of partying is a workout. Kind of like, you know, it just depends who values it. It's like, well, before we go out, we still have to get to the gym. Whereas these two guys would be like, well, before we go out, we should go out for pre-drinks.
Sure.
So, and it's just where you, you know, who the people you surround yourself with.
Yeah, well, let me give you an example. I mean, I think everybody, for the most part, fights tooth and nail to kind of keep their relationships in the status quo. But that's just not naturally the way it goes. I mean, I've got a buddy of mine, Russ. We were best friends growing up. I mean, and I probably haven't talked to him in maybe 6-7 months. But the reason is he just had a kid, you know, so he's busy. He's got stuff going on. I mean, he hadn't called. And I tried to stop by one day. He had some stuff going on. He lives, you know, 30, 45 minutes away. Yeah, I'm not hating on him. I'm not thinking that, oh, he thinks he's better than me because now he's got a kid and I don't. No. It's just things change. You know,
yep.
His life moved in a different direction than mine. You know, we don't have as much in common anymore. That's fine. Yeah, I get it. No big deal. I mean, but that's just the nature of how things are. And I think people are trying to, you know, fight that fact. I mean, you got to let that go because they're going to be, as soon as one person moves out of your life, somebody better will come in for that particular situation. It always happens. You know, as long as you're doing, you know, what you need to do, and that means, you know, being in the places that you need to be in because that's beneficial to what you want out of life. I mean, as long as you're congruent with what you want and your actions, I mean, there will be, it's almost like water, people just coming in and out. I've had that for years, you know, even traveling and things like that. I mean, people are always in and out of your life, you know, so everything is conditional. So don't take it personal. Because,
right, and then I guess the other issue is spouses and people that you live with.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it comes up every now and then about how hard it is if a significant other isn't necessarily as interested in diet and body shaping, fitness, whatever. I don't know what you call it, all this stuff, right? So that's an issue where you have to – that comes down to relationship stuff, communication. I mean, obviously you need that person's support. Ideally, they'd be just as into it as you are. And when you go to the gym, they go to it. Or it's priority, wherever you have it ranked in the priority scale on your life, you'd like it to be in the same priority scale in their life. But if it isn't, they don't have to be as into it as you are, as much as all you need them to do is support where it is in your life. And that has to be communicated. And openly communicated. And if that seems to be a source of friction in a relationship, and it's never going to be resolved, I don't really know where to go with that besides reevaluating the relationship itself.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, taking care of your body, it's not like 12 weeks and it's over. It's just how you have to live. So if you're with somebody who just doesn't want to live that way, that's a tension that needs to be resolved with some kind of communication. So, I don't really know what else to say about that. I mean, you can lead by example, but you can't force people to follow you. If they just don't want to, they just don't want to. And like you said, maybe that was fine when the relationship started, but you end up somewhere where you didn't necessarily want it to be. Like, I don't know. I don't really know where to go with that one. Cause as far as I'm concerned, I mean, that person should support you no matter what you want to do, and especially if you want to do something like this that's positive. So you know, yeah. It's different if you said, hey, I think I'm going to start a heroin habit. Would you support me? It's, you know, I can see someone pushing back against that. But if you say, hey, I really want to take care of my body, why would anyone not support you? So,
yeah.
But the problem is supporting, being emotionally supportive is one thing. But in this case, this sort of thing really is like a habit driven style of support. Like if they're constantly eating away, that's really detrimental to you, that you kind of need them to change that. Like there's only so much willpower that can go around until you kind of default to whoever in the house is pulling the least amount of weight. It's kind of like a house, is as messy as the messiest person. It's almost like the fitness level of the people in a relationship defaults to the person who does the least amount of work as far as taking care of their body.
Sure, it can be. I mean, but that's part of it all. I mean, none of these situations are unique. For example, you know, Lo's not very, she doesn't go to the gym or anything like that. I mean, she likes rollerblading and with the dog and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, very outdoorsy, likes doing stuff in the yard. I mean, she's in fine shape, you know, but it's very different from what we kind of do. I mean, she just naturally has a good shape about her and she just is able to maintain it. She doesn't overeat. She never has. She can push a half full plate of food away. No problem. Not me. I'm over there grabbing it before it goes in the trash. Right. But that's just, like I say, all of these things, I mean, they're not unique, you know, so you kind of have to unapologetically own your goals and lead, because just by definition, leading means pulling, not pushing. So you can't push other people to, you know, help you out. You just kind of got to do your thing and people will come. It's in this area of what I call, you know, the right side of the attention. It's in this area that people really have to start learning implicit communication and, you know, arguing and that type of thing really just, it becomes frivolous and, you know, superfluous. It's really unnecessary. Nobody's ever once you get that point, you can't argue your way to get people to follow you. It just doesn't work that way. You know, you have to learn to lead and use implicit communication, let people figure things out for themselves. But the best part about this, and I think one of the things that people are really having a hard time with, especially when it comes to sabotage points, is that they're viewing this side of this equation as being very, you know, selfish. And I look at it the other way around. I look at when you're, you know, carrying lots of weight and doing all this other stuff, that in itself is selfish because you're reacting totally about how other people, you know, react to you. You know, you're carrying lots of weight and stuff. But the other side, striving to be your best, is actually selfless because you actually are able to inspire someone else to be better. You can't inspire really anybody when you're kind of below average. There's nothing there. You're not leading. You can't inspire. And I'll tell you this, there's really nothing. There aren't too many better feelings in the world when somebody comes up to you and says, hey, man, it's because of you that I got in good shape. You know, or it's because of you that I, you know, found the woman of my dream, or whatever it is. When you inspire someone else, it's kind of like the ultimate philanthropy, if that's what you need to look at it like to get beyond that point. It's not you being selfish and trying to claw your way above other people. It's you trying to be your best so you can contribute the most overall.
Yeah, I guess it's, you could view it as a way that you're setting an example and teaching by action.
And that's the only way you can do it, you know, because it's kind of what's the old joke? You know, college professors are good at teaching because they're not good at doing.
I mean, yeah.
So it's kind of like you got people that are good at doing, and that's who everybody looks up to. I mean, who do you look up to? The Warren Buffett or the guy teaching, you know, economics in college for a certain degree? I mean, it's kind of different.
Yep. So. And then you brought up something earlier about Seligman's research on, I think there's a book called Authentic Happiness is one of the ones I read.
Yeah.
And it's the concept of the downward spiral of, depression and the fact that the psychology profession and the research is all geared around just getting people from below average or below normal back to normal. So like take the depressed person and just get him back up to not being depressed. But he's like, there's no reason that he can see why that spiral doesn't also spiral up into into, I guess not euphoric happiness, but something more satisfying than just being normal.
Yeah, and that's some type of emotion, positive emotion.
Yeah, something positive. It's hard to label it. Happiness is kind of a useless word. It's something more than that. So, anyways, the concept is that that spiral goes both directions. It doesn't just go from normal to down. It should go. It's reasonable to assume it goes from normal to up as well. And then you can be on that ride on the way up too, or you can like lead it. The problem is this is where the fear of success comes in, or the sabotaging your own success. Because if you get there, or you move somewhere that you're starting to get the right side attention, that attention of being a leader, the attention of going out of your way to do something better, or just something more. I don't know if better is even the right word, just something more, something noticeable. Now you're on the spot, and some people don't necessarily want to be on that spot because they don't want to be revealed as a fraud. There's the concept of feeling as though you're an imposter and that you don't deserve it because you spent more of your life believing you didn't deserve it or didn't belong there. So when you sort of find yourself there, you may worry that, oh my God, people are going to realize this isn't who I am. And that's partly being kind of caught up in the memories of your past versus where you're going in the future.
Sure.
But where you are right now, that's all there is, right? Like the future is this expectation and your past is just a memory. So all you are is what you are right now. So yep. If you happen to be getting in good shape and someone looks at you and they're like, wow, you're someone I want to be. If you have a memory or a thought that, oh, but well, I haven't been this for more than just today, but that's okay because today's all that there ever is. So it's trying to shake that concept that your past defines your future. And that's super hard for people to wrap their head around, the fact that it's just now and then your expectation of moving forward. Your past is sort of irrelevant if you can learn to not let it control what you think you are right now. I know that sounds a little, I don't know if that sounds a little chunky, but the point is you have to learn to not let your past define where you're heading. But I think that's part of why people have such a hard time allowing themselves to be in that position of having the positive attention, because they've got all these memories reminding them that, oh, but that's not who I've been so far.
Well, it's new. I mean, going back to what you were talking about in authentic happiness and some of the stuff he was talking about, you know, talking about psychology, bringing people, he mentions that all it really is focused on is bringing people back to zero, right? Mm. Where if you look at the health and fitness industry, all of the energy is focused on bringing people back to zero or back to average. All of it, 95% of that, right? I mean, weightlifting, all this stuff. I mean, they try to act like that it's about getting you to the best that you can be, but it's really not. It's everything's about getting you back to average, except for us.
Well, to the point where we know fitness marketers who their best sort of transformation ad campaign example was someone who never made it all the way to exceptional, just to average.
Sure.
And that was like the ad that pulled the best, because there was a lot of people relating to the concept of just going from like way overweight to just back to average.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's the end goal, you know, for most people.
And yeah, so, it's just to have the spotlight turned away from them and never have it come back again.
Yeah. I mean, that's really important. I think you really, if you're listening in, you really need to kind of internalize this, because you have to understand that you're going, you know, once you hit average, you're in a low attention state. You have blended in. You're like a damn chameleon. You know?
But on that point, that's fine if that's where you want to stop.
Yeah, absolutely.
If your whole point is just to not have negative attention, or just to remove the stress of not liking how your body looks, and you are super happy just literally having the spotlight turned away and never turned back, we're not saying that's a bad spot. We're just saying there's something past that if you want to go past that.
Yeah, and it takes a different mind shift. Like again, like we were saying, it's what Siegelman was saying is that it was building happiness at that point. It's the difference between relieving misery and then switching over to building happiness, and the two constructs and the ways that you get there are different. And kind of going back to what we were talking about with the health and fitness and the marketing, and we're all, you know, bringing you back to average. That's kind of the other scary thing, is because since nobody ever talks about going from above average or average to above average to exceptional, it's really never talked about. And when it is talked about, it's kind of talked about in a negative light. You really don't have any relevant expectations or any kind of guideline of what to expect at that point. So it's all new and it's all kind of scary, you know? So.
Well, this is where all that people attack other people for vanity and being obsessive about it. It's none of their damn business. Who are they to judge anyone else on the degree they want to take their body to or anything for that matter? It's kind of like people picking on business owners or people who have $100 million and are striving to bring their company to $1 billion. And they're like, oh, isn't that enough money? It's like that's just nonsense, because if you were in their shoes,
it's not about the money.
It's not about the money, but it's not the point. Who says that your view on what's enough is the correct view versus theirs?
Sure.
So it's all subjective, you know, opinions on everybody's position in life. Everybody's just, I don't know. I think the human race is so gossipy. I don't know what the word is. It's so we're more curious about what other people are doing than anything else on earth. That's why all of our entertainment's focused around it. It's everything is about everybody else. Very few people bother to stop and just
chase
forget about
dreams.
Everybody else and focus on themselves.
Yeah, nobody chases their own dreams. Everybody's living vicariously through everybody else. I mean, Jersey Shore or whatever it is.
Oh yeah, and like when everybody wants to see them fall. I hate that the average masses would rather watch people who've achieved something fall because it makes them feel better about themselves.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I had another point I was going to bring up. I can't remember.
All right, we'll get to it. I'm sure it'll come up another
time. Get to it another point. But yeah, so these are kind of the important things that you want to realize is that, number one, there's this you. And so if you seem to be sabotaging yourself once you get past average, now you kind of understand why. You have to make that switch. You have to be comfortable doing things because it's what you want to do. And it's not about everyone else. And it's not about necessarily whatever. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. This is really cool. And I think you'll like this. When you're, and this is with guys as well, and I've seen it with women and guys. When you're below average to average, people tend to compensate with personality a lot, like being overbearing or try to get cocky or even bitchy a lot of times. But when you get a better body, it allows you to be nicer to people, and it's shocking when you are nice to people because they aren't expecting it.
You have to put actually less effort in.
Yes. You put a lot less effort into, I don't want to say trying to impress someone, but let's just call it what it is. That's what it is. You know, when you meet someone, you're there in front of them, you know, collectively together, and they can see that. And there's something to be said for that. There are all sorts of just intrinsic things that, you know, cognitive biases and diagnosis bias that happen right there. And the funny thing about it is, and a lot of people don't understand this, is that when they say, you know, you only get one chance to make a first impression, that is true. What people decide about you at the very beginning or when they see you, it sticks. And this has been proven. I've read tons of stuff about it, research or whatever. It sticks.
It sticks like forever.
Yes, forever. And it's hard. It's hard for you to flip that, even in the presence of, you know, data, unbiased data that could change someone's mind about you, it doesn't change. And so that's kind of the other side of that is, you know, when you present yourself as this cool, calm, collected, together person, and then you can come in, that's all you need to do for the most part. You don't have to put on the dog and pony show and try to, you know, boost yourself up. You can come in, you can be nice, cool, calm, collective, and people won't be expecting that. Because a lot of times people expect people that look good to be very arrogant and conceited and things like that. You can immediately make a crazy first impression on someone by looking good and then sweeping under the rug, or not sweeping under the rug, but basically kind of coming out of the radar and just being, you know, super kind, super together, you know, those being very easy to talk to. Though that combination right there is freaking lethal. I don't care what anybody says. I've seen it work a ton.
And that's also the thing that other people will attack who don't have it.
Yeah, see, they don't get it. I mean, it's really cool. But the best thing about it is that it disarms so many people that they start to feel really bad for talking shit about you.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen too.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's a lot of this stuff. I mean, the biggest thing I think we wanted to get across was the fact that, you know, there are definitely, especially leading up to this next contest, there are definitely certain points that you're going to pass through, and you need to be aware of these things because, you know, they're going to affect you in your personal life and things like that. So the more you can be aware of and kind of have this little roadmap of not necessarily expecting it, but when it kind of pops up, you kind of know what's going on, the better you can deal with it and feel comfortable with it because you know it's coming. Mm-hmm. So, but again, bottom line, I mean, if you want the body and you want to take it to the next level, I mean, make no mistake, it's leading, and you have to be aware of that.
Yeah. And I suppose some of the guys have embraced this. I think maybe some of the girls have mentioned it, but the guys have for sure. But you can almost view the first round of negative comments as proof that you're really getting somewhere.
Yes.
As bizarre as that sounds, and as hopefully you live in a situation where that won't happen, but in most of us, somebody somewhere along the line is going to throw an arrow at you. And you should kind of almost be proud of that because you're like, oh, okay, I've obviously made enough change that someone somewhere feels the need to comment.
Yeah,
if you've changed enough that someone comments, good or bad, that and if you've driven someone all the way to a comment, then that is proof that lots of people are noticing. Like, so if one person comment, there's probably 10 people that notice, sort of thing.
Yeah, attention is attention. I think all attention is good because one person might say something negative about you, but another person beside them might take that and turn it into a positive. I mean, you can think of, you know, all the biggest celebrities and people that really know how to get attention. Rush Limbaugh, for example, Howard Stern. I mean, they've got listeners that hate them and listeners that love them. It's about 50-50. The only people they listen to, the only reason they listen to them is because they hate them. They hate them so bad they got to listen to them. Think about that. That's funny.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like, hatred's like right next to love. The worst feeling in the world is indifference. Like, if someone if someone couldn't care less whether or not you were alive or dead, that's pretty crappy. But someone who like hates you so much, that means they're super invested in the fact that you're alive.
And you can control them. Don't tell anybody I said that, but
yeah, and then obviously someone who like adores you, that's even more fun. Yeah. But it's kind of the hatred or love, both of those mean you matter.
Yes. Yeah.
But indifference, man, that means you don't matter at all, and that sucks.
Yeah.
Along part of the Venus effect is, you know, you're going to get some love, you're going to get some hate, but that means you matter.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like you said, I've said it before. I ask this question all the time. Like, what's the opposite of love? And people say, hey, I said, no, it's apathy. Mm-hmm. The absence of any feeling at all. And that's kind of where you're at in that low attention state when you're average for a lot of times. It's kind of just, I'm not saying that nobody cares about you. Don't, that's not it. But as far as being in that low kind of attention state is kind of an apathy versus the other two higher.
Yeah, and that's an apathy not from your close friends or but just from people who you wouldn't have known had an opinion. It's kind of like the day they notice you, and these are sort of more peripheral people. It's like, wow, I'm amazed that I managed to get noticed by those people. I didn't know those people noticed me.
Mm-hmm.
It could be people you never noticed.
Sure.
That's kind of cool when you get to the point where people, you're not even sure who they are, they're noticing you. Like all of a sudden, the extent to what you can influence has gotten bigger than the reverse.
Yeah, I've heard lots of times where people, guys and girls, when they start to, let's use weight loss as an example because it's just the easiest, but they start to lose weight and they start to get in the average and they're kind of, they're riding that wave of that temporary, attention they get from people that are close to them who notice a change. But they're not getting that attention from, you know, people in the bar or grocery store or whatever, because ultimately nobody even knew that. They're just, now you just look like everybody else. And people have these really big expectations about, you know, just losing, let's say 15 pounds, right? And they're like, oh, if I just lose 15 pounds, I'm going to be the shit. And everybody's going to, you know, line up. But it doesn't happen because they haven't swept past that part. All they've done is went from a, that kind of a high attention state to a low attention state where the society is in general isn't really paying attention to that. And so, and a lot of people, I've read it time and time again where people get, they get a little distraught because it's not bringing them the anything at all. But that's to be expected.
Yeah, that's to be expected. That's the middle part of the path.
Yeah, I mean, like John said, you gotta be aware that the congruence tests are gonna happen. I mean, once they first happen, it's like hitting a brick wall, and you have to power through them because that's kind of like your challenge. That's your congruence. I mean, do you deserve what you're trying to do? That's exactly what it is. And you power through it, and people ultimately do one or two things. Either they get out of your way and ultimately out of your life, or they respect you. It's one of the two. Yeah. Or it's both.
Yeah. And there's right. And again, it's, we're speaking for different levels of people here. There's going to be some, the reactions are going to be different from the people you live with versus the people you work with versus the people you see, you know, semi-frequently, like good friends versus acquaintances. Like everyone's going to have a different level of reaction, and everyone's kind of allowed to have a different level of reaction, so to speak, depending on how close they are to you. Like obviously someone who you live with they're pretty intertwined in your life, whereas someone you sort of just see casually, it might actually be easier for them to just be like, hey man, that's great. You've done a great job. It might be easier for them because they don't see you that often and it doesn't affect them as much. So it could potentially be easier for them to just kind of be happy for you. Whereas someone who's closer, who it might affect them more, they could resent it. Like it's hard to tell. I think I wrote this somewhere. You'll be surprised who your biggest supporters are and your biggest detractors will be. I guarantee there'll be someone who you just didn't expect to jump to your side and be your biggest cheerleader. And on the same note, there'll be someone who you can't believe totally was cutting into you and trying to cut you down. And somewhere along the line, that I wouldn't be surprised if that happens, where you're blindsided by someone you just didn't expect on both counts, positive and negative.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about this, talking about who you wouldn't think. It's almost like that left side of that you, like below average to average, is kind of like the friend zone. So like if you, let's say you haven't seen somebody for a while, and let's say it's a guy, and you drop 20 pounds, right? But you're still in that average kind of area. The next time he sees you, he's going to be like, oh man, you know, you lost some weight. You look good, right? But there's not a kind of a carnal thing going on there. But if you go from average to that above average, now you're starting to get into that non-friend zone where there's thoughts of sex kind of come across. So you sweep all the way under, and the next time he sees you, you're in that area. It's not, hey, you're my friend, you look good. It's like, holy shit. You know what I'm saying?
It's Yeah. The type of attention is...
The type of attention is very different. Yes. Yeah. It's not friendly attention at that point. It is almost kind of carnal interest attention. I'm trying to think of a better way to put that. But
sexual attention. Yeah. I don't know how else.
There you go. Let's just say that. So, it's pretty interesting. I was just thinking about that too, because I've seen... You know, that happened. It's almost like, hey, you know, the left side's almost like a, hey, good for you. And the right side's almost like a, hey, you want to come hang out
with me? What are you doing tonight?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, and that's kind of hater land. So just.
Yeah. And it's different. I mean, we didn't even get into this. We can talk about it another time, but the difference between the way guys and girls react.
Sure.
Like to you as a woman, you're going to. From what I'm gathering, girls are just so much meaner to each other than guys ever are.
Oh, yeah.
And I would think in general, you're basically going to get, for the most part, from guys, the attention's just going to keep getting better. And like Brad just said, it's going to be either good for you or, now I think you and I should sleep together sort of thing.
Yeah.
But either way, it's just going to be more and more kind of pot. I think the overwhelming attention from men will just be positive. It might complicate your life because all of a sudden guys might want to be like getting into your pants who you never thought would want to, but you know, that attention can't be bad for your self-confidence.
Yeah, that's a good problem.
It just might complicate your life, because who knows, you might want to act on it and you might not be in a position to, and I don't know. That's something completely different. But from the women versus women, I can see how you're going to create situations where competition you never thought was there all of a sudden arises.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether or not you were expecting it, women seem to be really competitive with each other, even if there's no common relationship interest involved. You guys can be mean to each other. So, I don't know. I think we should probably leave this off here, and we can get into the men versus women reactions at another point. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, it's just to kind of leave off on that note. I mean, for example, like Lo doesn't have very many female friends at all. And the ones that she does have, I mean, they're really good looking, but it's not like she doesn't like hanging out with women just for that reason. You know, and she's super low key and all this other stuff, but she's just not. She's same way. She's like, women are just too catty. Screw them.
Yeah, and I don't know if that changes with age, or if when they couple up and have husbands and have kids, if that changes. I know we've talked about it before, and it seems as though it's situation dependent. But in like, I don't know. It just, I don't know if we're speaking only to a certain, like the concept of what I'm thinking of is only a certain age group. But it seems quite universal that women are just super competitive with each other.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's funny. Yeah, we could go into a lot more stuff, but realistically, we kind of wanted to cover this little you, kind of decide some of the things that you need to kind of be aware of, understand that we understand what you're going through, because even though you're women, we've been through a lot of the same stuff as well. Not necessarily.
Well, and the guys experience it all the same too. It's just not
the volume's not as high.
No, I think with women, yeah, everything's just amplified with them.
Yeah, this whole attention thing, the volume's not as high. I mean, you know, you go look in magazines at guys, and as long as they got a six-pack, people are like, ooh, six-pack, right? I mean, they could look kind of lame, but you got to look bang on in a magazine for, you know, to be in a magazine as a woman, it seems like, which is really interesting, you know, as far as taking it to the next level. I don't know how that really relates, but it is more the volume of what we're talking about with guys versus girls and right. That attention. So,
anyways, I think we're good where we are.
Yep, cool, man.
All right, so for Brad Howard, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Venus Index Podcast.
Cool.